And I'm trucking on, I'm trucking on. Well, I'm moving on down the line. I know the time will do me fine. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Trucking On. I am going back to the basics after going off course a little bit and not talking about commercial real estate very much, because I wanted to talk about other things like alcohol addiction and visit with friends of mine that are outside of the real estate industry, but are both incredible entrepreneurs. With the last two episodes being with Nicole Parker King and Jason Burt, two creatives that inspire me. But now I'm bringing it back around to the industrial real estate market with the one and only Todd Hubbard. Todd Hubbard has been with NAI Robert Lind since he began his career about 20 years ago, and has risen to the top of that company. He's one of the top producers globally for NAI year after year. He's a partner in the company and the president of the Fort Worth office, which he's built from a solo operation to now having close to 20 people working it. And they absolutely dominate in Fort Worth. And Todd's story is one of growing up in a small town and working his ass off all the way through high school, working his way through college, getting an MBA, and not being able to find a job right after 9/11, and actually working construction, and not like the white collar construction, the blue collar construction, busting his ass before he took a chance and moved to the big city of Dallas to take it over as one of the most dominant commercial real estate brokers in the world. This episode gave me chills hearing about his story and brought tears to my eyes. And then also Todd played an integral role in my career by getting me my first job in industrial real estate when I decided to stop touring with my band. So who knows what I'd be doing if it wasn't for Todd being in my life, and very thankful for him. And I'm just lucky that he went to high school with all my cousins in early Texas. So love how this universe works and brings us all together. And get ready, because you're about to get inspired and you're going to get so much knowledge dropped by T-Hub. Todd Hubbard, the legend. Love you, brother. Let's get trucking. Todd Hubbard, what's up, my brother?
Hey, man, it's been too long. I was telling you, we hadn't caught up. This would be our catch-up for 10 years of life.
I don't think I've seen you in at least 10 years, and if not longer.
And I've got terrible facial hair now.
I have facial hair. You have more than I do.
Yeah. Well, just in certain spots, though.
I just have taken a shaving it off with clippers like once every 2 weeks, and then it'll grow back, and then I shave it off again. And now it's summertime.
Yeah. I think we're in that season of life, man, where it's so hard to stay in touch. You know, you got kid stuff, work stuff, and I mean, you'll probably get into this, but our roots go way back. And
oh yeah,
and I don't even get to see the cousins much anymore. So it's hopefully this is just a season and we pop out of it.
So yeah, we met in high school because you went to Early High with four of my cousins,
yep.
With Travis, Kristen, Jacob, and Logan, and they're also four of my closest friends. We're all the same age. And I mean, you'd come visit Dallas when they were, I mean, at least once, like in high school, I feel like, or like at least like early college years. Like
I did.
But we met, I would say, when we were in high school.
Yeah, no, it was my first trip. Like I lived in that bubble of early Texas. So I remember coming to see you, and you played in a band at that time. I think it was at South.
South was my band in high school.
That's crazy. And so we came in to see you play, and I remember going into your parents' neighborhood, and it blew me away how beautiful that area was, and it still is.
But Lakewood.
It was awesome. But I remember going to an awesome restaurant, and then your dad came to us not knowing how sheltered we were, and he gave us each like $25 and said, I know you guys have better things to do than this. And we're like, you have no idea, man. This is like the coolest thing ever, getting to see you play. So that was a long time ago, man. That was fun.
That was so much fun. My cousins have, especially Jacob, has always been like my number one supporter of the bands, at least back in my really band days. He was always there promoting me and going to all the shows. And we were roommates, you know, while he was in law school for several years. I went to your wedding.
Yep.
And I just was telling people, we just had lunch out in Fort Worth about, for a listing that you have out here to talk about it. And I was telling everybody at the table, like, I credit you with me being in the industrial real estate business. Because when I was playing in Slick 57, like, for a living, I hung out with Tigray, my cousin, all the time. And I remember you just, like, coming over and you'd hang out. I would go like take showers at his house because I didn't have electricity. So I would need like a hot shower. I would go to his house and you would be like hanging out there sometimes with him. And you had just gotten started at NAI Robert Lynn, where you still work today. And this had to have been in, when did you start? In 04?
Coming up on 20 years. Yeah.
2003. So yeah, that was the prime. I quit my job at leasing office space in 2002. I was doing, you know, I'd done commercial real estate stuff because it's, my dad's in that business, and I kind of like did internships, and I leased office space for 2 years, but quit my job in 2002. So 2003, I was like in the heyday of touring, living like ultimate rock star life. And I remember you coming, like sitting on the balcony at Tigray's apartment, and you telling me like, yeah, man, I'm working at this company and we like get in at 7 a.m. every day and we work till 6:30 and then we work every Saturday. And like, even if I have nothing to do, I'm just there and I'm reading the newspaper. And I was like, that sounds fucking horrible to me. but then after 4 years of being on the road, the tables turned in that lifestyle. I mean, you know, certain aspects of that lifestyle, the touring lifestyle became nightmarish for me, where it went from going like to my dream job to just like such a beating and a grind, and, you know, living with no electricity and flying coach to Australia in a middle seat when I was like puffy 265 6'4" dude. Like, I mean, we were like living, I was working in fast food restaurants and call centers and all kinds of that. And I mean, that wears you out. So then when I was 27, I had an epiphany and decided I always kept my real estate license. Like, I want to get back into real estate. And I called you because we would always cross paths, like hanging out with Tigray, because he lived in Dallas then, and we all would catch up like on a fairly regular basis. We were all in our like 20s, you know, and before getting married and kids and all that. So we would like go out and stuff. And I called you and like, hey, I want to get back into real estate. Can you hook me up? And then you set me up with Jeff Mercer. And that was the only job interview I had at Robert Lynn. And he hired me.
Yep.
And so that began my career in commercial real estate in 2006. And you were a market director then. And then I think like the first year, I only worked there for a year and a half because Mercer fired me. he told me he told me that I just didn't have what it takes to be a real estate broker.
Wow.
And that was like, that was great. Like, fuel for the fire.
It's motivation,
and,
man.
And I love Jeff. We had lunch. I mean, it's like 2 years ago, but it feels like yesterday. You know how that goes, but we're real cool. And I was like, thank you for firing me because I deserve to be fired. And it lit a fire under me. So thank you for getting me into this business, which I am like so passionate about. I love, and it's just like been an incredible run. Now it's 17 years for me and whatever, 20 years for you.
Yep.
But you immediately like, I think got promoted to VP and then SVP and then partner. I'm getting into business because we're in the same business and I get so excited about it, but let's go back to the early days and like growing up in small town Texas outside of Brownwood, age 12 to 22. What was that like?
Man, it was a great place to grow up. I mean, it was small town America. I mean, you know it well because your cousins were there, had a, you know, tumultuous childhood in some ways, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. But, basically, you know, for me, I came from not much. I mean, we lived paycheck to paycheck. My family did. And my mom and dad had a pretty tumultuous divorce. And
How old were you when that happened?
I was probably 11. And it impacted me a little bit to the point where, you know, my mom, you know, she sacrificed everything for us. She'd worked three jobs and, you know, she paved the way for us. No one in my family had a college degree. So I'm going down a path of trying to figure out what life's all about. So even in high school, I didn't play sports because I worked. I worked at a bank all through high school. And then my mom sacrificed, you know, by taking a job at Howard Payne University as a secretary so I could get free tuition. So I worked and went.
What did you do at a bank in high school?
I was a teller.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from that perspective, what a great training for customer service, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it was crazy, especially in a small town. You kind of, there's some crazy stuff that happens, but it was good because I had to be disciplined early on. But when I went to Howard Payne, it sucked because I didn't have a college experience at all. I went there and I'm blessed that I was able to because that's all we could afford, which was nothing. And I lived at home. I worked at the bank and I would go on the weekends to see Jacob and Logan and Travis and all my other friends at
UT.
So, yeah, UT, A&M, Tech. So that was it. It was like I was forced to grow up pretty fast, but, you know, I appreciate it because it kind of gave me a work ethic that carries on today. So
no doubt, unparalleled in my opinion. And then you got out of Howard Payne and then you went to business school right after that?
I went to Lubbock and I thought I wanted to work for a professional sports team. So I went to work for the Lubbock Cotton Kings.
What is professional sports team is that?
Worst. Run organization in the history of the world.
What type of sport was that?
Hockey. Minor league hockey.
Minor league hockey in Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, and I did commercial sales, and I did not make a single sale because here I am, this dude from early Texas, and they're telling me, you've got to go ask these people to spend $12,000 to put your name in the ice, and that did not compute in my head at all. So,
and it wasn't the Dallas Stars ice.
No. It was pretty low rent stuff.
That's high rent like placement in my opinion still today.
Yeah. It's just, I didn't believe in it. So I worked there. And then my whole goal in going to Lubbock was to go to grad school. So after a year of that, I stopped and I went and got my MBA and I took out a loan not only for tuition but to live on. And so I had to convince them to let me try to get through that 2-year program in 1 year because I didn't want to accumulate a bunch of debt. And so
they, what did that cost back then?
You know, I don't even know. I want to say, you know, to live and everything, it was probably, you know, $20,000, and I'm living cheap, you know. And I'm roommates with Jeremy Mercer.
And that's where you met Jeremy.
That's where I met Jeremy. He was friends with a bunch of guys I went to high school with at Early, and that whole connection came about. He went to Irving High, and even to this day, I'm very good friends with a bunch of that group that met the Early guys. And so I got the benefit of that. And so I did. I got my degree in a year. But the shitty part was that the whole Texas Tech program had a placement program for the MBA. And that was literally scheduled on September 12th of 2001.
Wow.
So 9/11 happens, no one's hiring. My stepdad had just been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and was having a really bad bout with it. And so I moved back to Brownwood, and I go to work for a guy that I went to high school with doing construction, like hardcore construction. And he was touting me around town as he's got the most educated.
Were you like a superintendent?
No, I was hard labor.
Really?
Yeah. So he would say,
what were you building?
A metal building, drywall. I mean, just.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so, but
this
I didn't.
Explain so much.
Yeah. But I didn't complain because it was the only job I had. And he would tout me around as most educated workforce in town. And people in Brownwood thought an MBA was like an STD or something. They had no idea what that meant. So there was no credibility to that whatsoever. And then ironically, small world stuff, Charles Jenkins, your uncle.
Yeah,
knew I was looking to do something. He worked for a manufacturing company there, and I got on
his whole life.
Yeah. And a great man. And I owe him a lot because he did get me that gig. And so I went on as a staff accountant for Superior Essex. I was making $28,000 a year, and I always within me I had this ambition that was just there. And I think partly because my grandparents were huge influences on me. They're like the greatest generation, just awesome people. And my grandma would always tell me growing up that, you know, you can do more, you can be better. And so that was
awesome.
It was in my head.
I get chills.
It was in my head. So I was there and I was just dying for an opportunity and I didn't want to get stuck there. I just didn't, and I felt like I was on the verge of being stuck in Brownwood and never getting an opportunity. And I was about to take a job at Rubbermaid in El Paso, and Jeremy Mercer called me, and he's like, dude, if you think Brownwood's bad, you do not want to move to El Paso. So he said, you should talk to my brother, Jeff Mercer. And Jeff was an executive vice president at that time, Robert Lynn Company, and I had no idea what commercial real estate was. I didn't know anything. I'd only been to Dallas to see you, and we went to Six Flags like once as a kid. So I'd never been to Dallas, even though that's the big city close to Brownwood. Never been. And so I come here, I meet with them, and I'm thinking to myself, man, if I can just surround myself with these talented people and they can tell me what to do, it's an opportunity. And I remember as I was contemplating the job, I was in the parking lot of Wynn Pharmacy in downtown Brownwood. My mom had worked there and he told me these words, which really don't seem that big, but to me they were huge. And he goes, Todd, if you take this job, I can teach you how to make a lot of money. And no one had ever said anything like that to me before. And so that just, I mean, I was like, I'm in, I'm doing this. And so my grandparents were so influential with me that I went and kind of told them what I was doing. Well, they're the most risk averse people in the world, being from that greatest generation. Right. They didn't think it was a great idea because they were like, how much money are you going to make? And Robert Lynn offered like, I don't even know what it was back to then, but it wasn't enough to live on in terms of just a draw. And so
And it's like, yeah, it's a draw, it's a loan basically.
Yeah.
So it's not even real salary or anything.
Yeah. So they wrote, and my grandparents, they never made much money, but they saved everything. But they wrote me a check for $15,000 and said, you take this job, we believe in you, but you got to have this money to live on. And so when I came here, I knew no one or very few people. I knew you and a handful of others. And I every day I thought about paying that $15,000 back to them. And so that was my motivation. And I know when they wrote me the check, I don't think they intended that I would pay it back, but that was now my goal. And so Saturdays and Sundays when everybody else is going and having a beer, I'm grinding. And I, to this day, I've been very lucky to, you know, do a lot of deals and all that. That's the single greatest transaction in my life was the day I wrote them that check for $15,000. And that was about a year after I started. And you know, so without them, man, it was, I still get choked up about that because that allowed me to come here and that drove me. So that's how it started.
Man, and so I started at Robert Lynn, and I got to experience a job interview with Jeff Mercer, which when you meet with Jeff Mercer, and especially back then when we were, you know, that was a few years apart for us, but I think he was 33 when I met with him, and I was 27. And I mean, he was just like, he could have retired really at 33. So he's just, his energy was just like, he's such a killer, and he's so personable, and he's so cool. He's an incredible teacher. And then the energy of Robert Lynn Company, at the time, I don't know what it's like today. Obviously I haven't worked there, but I know that you guys still have like incredible market share. And I know that the majority of the people that were there when I was there 17 years ago are still there.
Yeah.
Jeff not included, who went to go start his own company. Cause I mean, I think when NAI got involved and it became corporate, Jeff didn't like the corporate, and he's just like, like I said, he would just want to go do his own thing. And I think that's part of why we parted ways too. But man, getting trained by Jeff and the whole Robert Lynn method of training. And I've worked at Cushman & Wakefield, Transwestern. I interned at the Staubach Company. That had an amazing culture too, the Staubach Company. But when like walking into Robert Lynn, when I wanted that job so bad. I remember I like misspelled a word on the test they make you take, like the caliper personality test. And I called you. I was like, dude, I think I misspelled like some word like successful or something, you know, like I don't know, some stupid, like easy word. You're like, dude, that's not going to matter. and then got the job. But then when I walked in, I mean, it's like, suited up every day, be in the office at 7 a.m., be there till 6 p.m., very, very methodical training program. I'm not aware of any other company in anywhere that has such a great training program. And the way that also, in a great culture, it felt like you're in an office with about, like, 30 captains of the football team, just like every, and then another cool thing about the Robert Lynn approach is that it's sub-market focused, which I think is great for the culture because, I mean, it just depends on what, you know, what you want to do, but it's divided up into certain territories basically where each team of brokers is responsible for their certain territory. And then if you're crossing over, you're partnering up with that other broker in that territory. So there's not a lot of infighting. And I think that there is a lot of internal competition at all the big shops. It's just, it happens because most big shops give you an office and a phone book, and sure, they'll have training and whatnot, but not near this type of training where, I mean, we had Action Group. Do y'all still do Action Group?
They do.
Oh yeah. Like every Monday morning, 8 a.m. It's like, how many cold calls did you make? How many decision makers did you talk to? So methodical. The CEO of the company, George Dutter, we would meet like once a month with him, like on every single deal that we're working on. He met with everyone in the office like that on every single deal. And he like knew, you know, Dutter is just like
genius.
And then you're surrounded with Jeff Mercer, Mark Miller, like Stanzel, Craig Jones was running I think Jeff stopped running the whole training program right when I started, and Craig Jones took it over. He was just an amazing teacher. But all that investment and time in the training, and then the very specific just guidelines on how the business operated, I think is really unique, and it's proven obviously successful. And I think you followed that training to the T, and you did exactly what Jeff told you to do. And you got to go be the market director for Fort Worth, which they didn't really have a Fort Worth guy, right?
They had Todd Lambeth was the guy before me.
I know,
but
Todd.
Yeah, yeah.
So he left. And so then you had the whole Fort Worth market to yourself. And tell me, and tell everyone like what that entailed, like when you're like, okay, Todd, your territory's Fort Worth, you've never done commercial real estate before, then like what did you go do?
Yeah, I mean, man, you're right about the program. I mean, it was just a blessing for me to pop in and be a part of something that was so structured, because that's what I needed. But yeah, I mean, I lived in Valley Ranch, and our office was in Dallas off of 635. And Jeff would always say, how long does it take you to get here? And I would say, oh, it takes me about 30 minutes. He's like, dude, I can see your apartment from here. And I would take the back roads because I was so petrified to drive here. It was so overwhelming. So he's like, dude, you got to get on the freeway. And so the good thing for me about, they made me start and end my day in the office every day. So I would start at 6:35. Drive to Fort Worth and then have to drive all the way back. And back then, the highway system sucked terribly. So I wasted years of my life in traffic. But what that helped me with is I couldn't cheat. So I'm driving over here. If I'm going to drive that far, I'm going to be out busting it. So every day I would get there early, get started, and then come to Fort Worth and just make cold calls.
You go door to door.
Door to door.
Every door. And track every industrial building
yep.
in all of Fort Worth, basically.
Yes.
And build it all into a database. And you knew every owner and every tenant.
Yep.
And then you call them over and over and over again.
Yep.
And I did the same thing when I got started there. I worked the Brook Hollow area, like so the oldest area. And then you worked your way up to the top. You're a partner in the company. You're president of the Fort Worth office. Congratulations for
all
of your successes. How many folks do you... Now, you were one dude working Fort Worth. How many do you have in the Fort Worth office now?
We have 17 now.
Wow.
And what's crazy, though, is how I got to that position, because my goal from the minute I started here was to become a principal. Well, and I always look back and think, golly, how did I have the... really cojones to do some of the things I've done. But when I started, it was Robert Lynn Company.
Yeah.
So then about a year and a half in, it became NAI. Well, I am working Fort Worth. There is a company here called NAI Huff Partners.
That's right.
So you've got Fort Worth, and then we were going to be Dallas NAI only. So I'm going in as a young guy who's starting to get my legs underneath me saying, how's this going to work? So I go to George, and George is like, no, it's business as usual. We've talked about it. It's business as usual. Well, I roll with that, and then I start taking more market share. And there, you know, the NAI Huff guys, there's a lot of good ones, but there were a few that were livid. And so rightfully so. So I was dealing with things like they wouldn't let me tour their listings. One guy told me to be careful if I'm in a parking lot. They might take a bat to my legs. This is like mafia type stuff.
Are you kidding?
No, it was insane. So I'm the one taking all the blunt, you know, objections
by
from
the
these
way,
guys.
What we do for a living, especially getting started, is such a damn grind. I can't even imagine then, like, this whole politics and, I mean, threats. That's insane.
And I'm still early naive, man. I'm not accustomed to that. People in early are super nice and friendly.
Right.
And I'm sitting here, and so it was insane. So I finally, Mark and George asked me,
did you tell him this?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm the one taking all the blame. And they're like, well, no, it's just business as usual. And then they, you know, I made my goal and they asked me to a nice dinner and they told me that I was going to become a principal. And here I am. I don't even know how old I was. I was probably 27 years old at the time.
How long you been working there?
Probably about 3 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I turned it down, and in a very respectful way. I mean, I made them aware that I'm beyond thankful and grateful and all this. But I said, I can't do this anymore with this NAI thing. It's just hovering over me. I'd go cold call on tenants. And tenants would say, hey, you need to respect your territory. So they were like selling that message in the marketplace and I'm having to deal with it. So the bottom line is that kind of put things into motion to where it just didn't make sense to have a separate NAI office for Fort Worth and Dallas. And so as a result of that, the old NAI Huff became Transwestern through a series of events, and we were able to get the Fort Worth umbrella, and I got the opportunity to open that office at that time. So there was a lot of just grief.
And then you decided to become a principal.
Yeah, at that time.
At that point.
Yeah, when they worked that out, I mean, you know, I had to seek other opportunities, but I've been very loyal. I mean, that's my background and how I was raised. And I was happy here. Like, I didn't want to go anywhere, but
right.
I had to keep my eyes open because I didn't know where this thing was going. But once that got sorted through, then it allowed me to become a principal, and then we were able to open the office. And my first hire was Michael Newsom, who was a great hire for me, still with me as day one of the top brokers in Fort Worth. And then I hired John McDaniel to run our retail division, and he's amazing. And so as a result of that, we kind of built this team around us and have a lot of tenure here. And
do you have to do George Dutter type activities here and like meet with everyone and go over all the deals?
No, George still does it
with
everybody.
He does.
Which I'm glad that he has that role because I don't want it.
Him.
Oh yeah, he's great.
I got to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, you should.
I want to get like Mark Miller too. I've already talked about it. And Chase Miller.
Yeah, Chase. Oh yeah. I mean, he's amazing.
Chase interviewed with me, and my dad was a lone wolf in real estate. So, and he's not a broker. And by the time I got out of college, he owned properties, but they're pretty light, at least triple net properties that are low, no maintenance. So there wasn't like an opportunity to work with my dad. I have been able to work with him like as partners in deals, and I've been his broker a few times, but, I was like, Chase, like in there was this thing, like I think he didn't want to be like viewed as like having any nepotism because he's such a competitor, and so he was talking to everybody. I was like, listen, your dad is one, in my opinion, one of the best real estate brokers in the world, and he's your dad, and like this is going to be such a cool opportunity, and you know what? The way that this world works, you can go outproduce your father and on your own without his help at all. And I think that's what he's done.
Hey. I mean, I remember
in a very short period
very
of time.
Very short
too.
Period of time. I remember
he's a beast.
He is. We still do training days together, and he came and spent a day with me. And I remember him telling me I'm going to be the top producer here. And I'm thinking, okay, man, get in line. And then, wow. But I knew right away, you can just sense that guy's got something special. And he's he's exceeded every expectation and then some. And yeah, to your point about Mark, I mean, Mark is the definition of just a good guy and just consistent, professional. And he's been a great example for me to see the right way to operate. And nice guys can win. And he's done that consistently.
Yeah, he's so consistent. I officed right next to him when I was there, and just Mark Miller, his first one. Him and Jeff would have like competitions to see who could get the office the earliest.
Yeah,
which now that structure to me, I needed it, and I learned so much. But I learn quickly, and it took me 1 year, and it's like I don't like to wear suits. I don't like to be told what to do.
Yeah,
and I have a trouble with that.
Yeah.
I don't have your, like, that kind of, I don't want to say it's a work ethic. It's just like, I feel like I had, and also I managed and booked my band. I'd been in lawsuits. I'd ran a business for 5 years as like an entrepreneur that was working basically. I mean, that's what's, when you play in a band for a living, that's a commission-based job. Like, you go play a show and get paid, or you got to go pick up a part-time job waiting tables or whatever, but there's no guarantees. So I think I had a lot of that. So having a boss was tough for me.
Yeah.
And any kind of structure. And Jeff would talk to me. He's like, you know, if you just like, I know you're like doing everything that I tell you to do, but you're spending half, you only work like part time. And I was like, well, I think that's brilliant.
No doubt.
That's lazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, and it's like, well, maybe we better not work together anymore. And I mean, I'm still like that. I've tried to work as efficiently as possible. And I know, and just like how my brain works and when I perform the best, and that's when, you know, I can be in charge of what I'm doing. So it's definitely, I mean, man, it's just like such a proven program. Not necessarily the one for me. That's why I left, but God, just so much respect for that organization. And I can't even believe that George Dutter 20 years later is still looking at every deal, but he's an absolute beast.
You want to talk about a creature of habit. He is the epitome of that. But yeah, I mean, you know, the reality of it is you kind of, I've evolved a lot to what you're saying. I'd rather work smarter than harder, because I've got a family and, you know, all that. But what I admire most about you is, and I knew you'd be great, is you're authentic, you know. And I've always, when I did the training for years after Craig did, and it's like, be who you are. Don't try to be somebody you're not. And people love you, and you are who you are, and you've been innovative and done things that no one else has done. And I respect the hell out of that. And because you are a unique person, and you've been able to sell that.
Thanks, my brother. I had a lot of trouble at first too, because I tried to hide that when I first got started. You weren't training back then. I don't think authenticity was not the buzzword that it became probably like a couple years later. And it's not like I felt like I was, and this is all me in my head. It's not like I was, I was kind of being told, like, George would call me like, dude, you got to come to the office at the end of the day. Cause I did not, I'm like, why? It's insane. I live in East Dallas. Like, I don't want to drive in traffic. Like, I have a rule. Like, I do not drive in traffic unless I absolutely have to. Like, I don't like that. And anyway, so I appreciate all of that. But yeah, those early years though, man, I played golf because I thought like, cause my dad's like, you need to play golf. And Jeff said, you need to wear a suit to work every day, and you need to wear a tie, and you need to do this. And I'm like trying to do all these things, and I was hiding my tattoos. I was embarrassed of them. I was like, oh my God, what if somebody knows that I have tattoos? Then like I had to try, really play it down playing in a band. Like when I met with Jeff, like about my band, I was just like, Yeah, yeah. It was just fun stuff I did. But I mean, I still was playing a lot. I called that my base salary my first 5 years in commercial real estate. I played shows every weekend and still play maybe three shows a week to make money. And in those early years, but I hit it and I played it way down. I remember one time Rick Medinas, who I love him also, another great lifer at Robert Lynn Company. And I'm going to get him on too. We have the funniest story of the first conference I went to. But I remember he was looking at my phone and I had a picture on my phone of MySpace or something, and my tattoo was on. I grabbed my phone from his hand because I was seriously scared I might get fired if they knew I was all tatted up. And I mean, it's so funny because it took me a very long time, and I would say 4-5 years, maybe, getting in. Once I kind of got my first big national tenant rep account and I started seeing success, then I got the confidence. And also, thankfully, my first big client was a third-party logistics company where their culture is very laid back and they're wearing jeans and stuff. And I remember going in suited up to a pitch and the CFO is like, please don't ever wear that suit again to my office. I was like, are you serious? And I was like, no problemo.
Yeah.
And then once I started to get that success, then I slowly but surely crept into it. But it's still, I mean, I would say it was like a 8-year transition before I finally am just like, yo, I'm me and here's my story and here's what I do, and felt really comfortable in being myself. But that was really difficult for me in those early years because I just wanted to fit in, and I never felt like I fitted in ever, because when I played football, I also played in a punk rock band.
Yeah.
And then I played in a punk rock band and I went to an Ivy League school. Yeah. I tried to hide the fact that I was in a rockabilly band and I played that down at college. And then I played the fact that I went to college down when I was hanging out with punk rockers at dive bars during the summers.
Yeah.
And I interned at the Staubach company and I was playing in my band 5 nights a week and just trying, I was living 2 separate lives.
Yeah.
And really, if I ran into somebody when I was playing a show that I knew from commercial real estate, that would freak me out. And then if I ran into some band guy and I'm wearing a suit at a commercial real estate lunch, my skin would crawl and I'd be embarrassed about that. Cause I had these two identities. And finally, through just age and maturity and whatnot and having kids, which makes you not care about anything else in the world, I would say that's when I really just started getting real comfortable in my skin. Cause it's who cares? All I'm trying to do is be a good dad now. And just be real. And I'm going to have to be real to be a good dad.
Yeah, so. I agree. And I think our industry's evolved too. I mean, just think 20 years ago, man, it was old school. And now I do think, if you look around, there's a lot more acceptance of things that back in the day when we started, man, it was a very, very old school conservative. Now you go our luncheon today, we had probably 12 of the top 20 brokers in DFW and, half of them are wearing jeans. You wouldn't have seen that.
Tennis shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
sneakers,
I mean, so I do think it's evolved.
I do the same thing.
Yeah.
This is what I wear to I wear this to pitches.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm wearing my normal Henley and jeans.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I have one of my best clients who's one of my closest friends. Brian Keller, we've talked about it before because it was hot as hell one time. And I was up at their headquarters in Defiance, Ohio. And I went to his board meeting. And I was everyone's wearing golf shirts because it was 100 degrees or something. And I'm wearing my long sleeves and pouring sweat.
Oh.
And I was I still don't, and I'm sleeved in tattoos. And it's I still don't, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And we talked about it, and he was like, you know, I understand that though, because it could be a little bit distracting. And me being sleeved out in tattoos, I actually went on a building tour and looked at a 1 million square foot building with a client. And one of the people rep, the landlord there, is wearing a golf shirt with their sleeved out tattoo showing. And it was distracting to me. I was like, that is, there's a time and a place for it.
Yeah.
And if I'm doing business, like I want to be focused on business and not telling the stories of my tattoos. But hey, after the board meeting, and then we're going to go sit back on the patio and have a barbecue and all of that with the client, like totally different.
Yeah.
But when I'm in a business setting, I do feel like they can be distracting. But that's still something I deal with, man.
Yeah,
like I
yeah.
think about it because I love getting tattoos.
Yeah.
And it's like part of me, but like I don't want them to be as a distraction.
And I get that.
And most people like have no, like when they find out, I mean, you know, I talk about it on the podcast now a lot, but like, I actually just did a podcast with my longtime tattoo artist who, is world-class while he was giving me a tattoo. So it's like all coming out.
That's awesome.
But, anyway, man, all back to Todd Hubbard. So what advice would you give to your younger self?
Man, I would probably, I mean, I just had a lot of pressure on myself. A lot of it was financial, and I didn't want to go back to Brownwood with my tail between my legs. So I would go back and tell myself, everything's going to be okay, man. Just keep grinding, keep doing what you do, and keep your nose to the grindstone, and it's going to be good. Cause there's, you know, it's a tough business. It's funny because a lot of the people that we know, they only know a few people in commercial real estate. And by chance, they happen to be you, Jeremy Mercer, Jeff Mercer, and Ryan Boozer. So they all look around and think, man, commercial real estate's easy. The five guys I know in commercial real estate kill it. And, you know, they don't realize that those are probably the top 1% of commercial real estate guys in the marketplace. And so it's funny, but I did put that pressure on myself.
Leaving myself out of that equation, not to sound braggadocious or anything, but I would say, like, when you say the marketplace, I would say that is the global marketplace,
yeah.
Not just Dallas, like those names you mentioned. And, anyway.
No, it's funny, so. but I did. I wish I would have.
It's really funny though.
It is funny. It's ironic because I think people say, oh my God, it's easy. And it's not brain surgery. I think the problem with our business that people don't take into account for is it's so bipolar. Like every day is a day of rejection, and you celebrate and you win and you lose. And if you don't have the mental fortitude for that, it's tough, and you have to build that thick skin, because I didn't have that naturally at all.
Yeah.
And that's part of going back to what I'd tell myself. I didn't have thick skin then. You build it over time. But man, it is a, every day is a different day.
I still wake up January 1st every
scared
year.
Scared shitless.
With fear.
Oh, absolutely.
And our managing director at Colliers is a good buddy of mine. He's an incredible manager of all, you know, everyone, Daniel Taylor. And the first time I met him, he's like, you know what I like about you that I can tell is that you feel like you're on the verge of losing. You work in a manner that you're on the, like, you feel like you're on the verge of losing everything at all times. And there is that, because I have had those moments where I had a bunch of really good years, and then all of a sudden I had one client and they got acquired, and I was doing like 50 deals a year with this client, and then they got bought by another gigantic company, and like it went poof. And then when Gina, my ex-wife, mother of my children, got pregnant with Betty, I had negative $50,000 on my credit card. And that's after I had many years of success, but that's when that happened and that big acquisition took place. And then I was in a partnership that wasn't working out, and I was giving away 2/3 of the money I was making. If I was just keeping what I was making, I would have been fine, but I was in a bad partnership, and it was just a whole combo of things. And I mean, that the birth of my daughter like absolutely like catalyzed like a newfound work ethic. It probably like the Brownwood work ethic that you got from your upbringing, all of a sudden, like me being a father, that just like gave me so much drive. And I have young brokers that I work with all the time. And they're like, yeah, I'm going to wait to have a kid so I make more money. And it's like, have a kid and you'll make more money.
Absolutely.
It's like, go buy a Lamborghini and you'll make more money. go, because that's what kids cost.
No, I've got the same fear of failure, man. Every year I feel like, you know, my wife tells me I've got poor boy syndrome, which I think I do. I was probably could be diagnosed with that because I mean, I have this fear of, you know, and I was raised in it. I love my family background and everything about it, but just that fear. I remember when I came to lived in Valley Ranch and I packed up and all I had was a bed and a big screen TV, both of which I took a loan out for. And so when every January, to your point, when I'm going through goals and I just, this sense of urgency, I'm just scared of going back to that place. And I'm a long ways from there now, but that fear never goes away inside of me. And I think that is a good thing and a bad thing. It drives me, and then at times it drives me insane. So, and it definitely drives my wife insane. So we're,
you know, so, yeah.
But it is who I am, you know, and I own it. I own it.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time and money and going to things like Tony Robbins conferences and things like that. And he was an integral mentor in going to his conferences and like learning about that and like really pouring into like spirituality and all that kind of stuff. And just like, I read books on abundance and wealth and prosperity and like how to think and grow rich and all of these things that help. But I still wake up January 1st and it's like,
oh yeah.
Motion. And people ask me, and I'm very superstitious too. And I'm just like people ask me now, like, how's your year going? I was like, ask me on January 1st of next year, how last year or how this year goes.
Yep.
And then that's the nature of our business. It's very hard to have predictability because you can have leases getting, you know, put on the desk of a CEO to get signed and you've done all the work there is to do. And that can be $500,000 in your pocket or $0 in your pocket. And that, and sometimes that the decision, it's like playing blackjack or something.
Yeah.
And sometimes 10 of those in a row won't get signed.
Yep.
And you just got to keep just knowing, you got to keep providing value and generating value. That's what Tony Robbins says.
Yeah.
And he like had me do this mantra, like, I create more value than anyone expects whenever I'm feeling that way. And he said, just say it 10 times in the morning, 10 times at lunch, 10 times at night. And then when you say that, then you think of new ways to create value for people. And because he goes, if you give, you shall receive. That is a rule of the universe. So I know like that's like whenever I'm feeling that way, it's just like take massive action and go create value for people and then it'll come back around.
Yep.
So that's wonderful. What would you consider your greatest failure and what positive thing did that trigger?
You know, I'd say in my business life, I think as a manager, my biggest failure is not cutting bait soon enough with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, especially this office in Fort Worth for us, it's very, we have a very tight culture because it's small enough to where I've always said, if you get over 50 people, it's hard to keep a culture together. We're in that sweet spot of call it 15, 17, 20 people and everybody's friends and family and I think, but it did no one justice. And what I found about managing people is the people that, you know, you're drinking through a fire hose when you start. So it's fine to ask a lot of questions. But if you're a year into the business and you can't go move forward without being paralyzed, this is not the business for you.
Right.
And so the people that you spend the most time managing typically are not going to be performers. And I wish I had learned that early. Now, why that's helped me now, because now I know where to allocate my time in that role. And then I'd say personally, man, and this is still a struggle this day, is you kind of become a victim of your own success. You've got so many things going on. You've got a million things in your head and just being present being present
with your children,
with anybody,
family, yeah, you know, with anybody.
And I've gotten better because I'm very self-aware of that, and so you know, I definitely put the phone down and do all that. But I wish I would have started that much earlier.
Yeah, I like actually just pray almost every day. Especially I'm divorced now. I have my kids 3 days a week, but on those days I have my kids, I'm just like, be present with your children tonight. Like,
yep,
just be present. Nothing else matters other than that. And I don't do it perfectly, but I try. And yeah, just being conscious of it, that's the first step. Do you have a morning ritual?
Yeah, I do. I mean, this is a Robert Lynn thing, man. I'm an early riser. You got to be.
What time do you wake up?
I usually wake up around 5 to 5:30, and then I'll do a little workout at home. And I've found my routine where, you know, it's about a 20-25 minute workout.
What's that
entail? It's basically mainly like cardio and core stuff, and yeah, but it's very focused and no stopping. And you know, I've started that probably about a year ago because, I mean, I fell off for a long time.
Were you into bodybuilding at some point?
Oh, I was. Back in the day,
you
was.
Were.
Yeah, it's funny. At my 40th birthday, I think my wife had a bunch of photos of me up on a board, and one of her friends comes up and is like, who is this guy and why isn't he here? And it was me.
So you were jacked.
Yeah.
Did you compete?
No, I didn't. You were
just a gym rat.
Yeah, like, that was it. I mean, back then I was working and going to school and that was all I had. So it's funny when you've got that much time on your hands and I could eat right and do all that. But no, I did. Once I had kids and stuff, man, I let it go. And then I look in the mirror and say, what the hell just happened? And so then I think it is an evolution when you get to our age, and you've certainly, you're the definition of doing it, but.
Well, I turned it around, bro.
Yeah, that's like what I'm saying.
I just posted that picture on Instagram. I don't know if you saw it, but it was me when I was 37 years
old. Absolutely.
I was 287 pounds. I'm 220 pounds now. And like, I mean, I tell people all the time, like, you can turn it around at any point in time.
No, you can.
You just got to make up your mind to do it.
I think the mindset sometimes for us is you start to think, well, I'm old now and I'm getting older and that's not as important. I think once you hit a certain point though, there's a point of no return. So if you don't get after it at a certain point, you got to get going. So I have got myself back into really, and getting back to the mental aspect of our business. If you're not taking care of your body, it's hard to be good.
It's the foundation.
It really is.
So,
I've stepped up my game. I'll never be a bodybuilder again, but I can at least take a little more pride than I had before.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I always like to ask all these questions to everyone because I'm such a traveler. But what's your favorite hotel, or you can, if you're not a hotel guy, like vacation destination or whatever?
Yeah, I'd say I don't go to many hotels because luckily I don't travel like you do for business as much. So usually but Little Dick's Bay in the Caribbean's pretty legit.
Really?
Oh yeah,
where is that in the Caribbean? I haven't spent very much time there.
Really. Oh man, it's killer. We went there last year on a family vacation, and I mean, it's like paradise defined, and it's in the Virgin Gorda, but I would highly recommend it. It's
Little Dick's Bay, is that a hotel?
Yeah, it's okay. A resort there. Yeah. It's unreal. That'd be number one for
great,
sure.
Great name.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let me in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They let me in.
What is your favorite restaurant?
Man.
Maybe a good Fort Worth restaurant.
There is, but I mean, my wife's Dallas girl, so we typically, when we venture out of our bubble of South Lake, we go to Dallas. But I would say Shinsei is, you know, if you love sushi, man, that's so clutch. But Fort Worth stepped up their game on restaurants. I'd say Dallas is still ahead there, but there's some cool new stuff going over here in the where we went today for lunch in the Stockyards. There's
so
some,
good.
There's some awesome
spots
over there.
What's that, Hotel Drover?
Yeah, Hotel Drover.
That's a great little spot in the Stockyards.
Yeah.
That food was amazing. Shinsei, actually the sushi chef there, they call him Elvis, you know?
Yep.
If you see him, he has like a pompadour.
Yeah.
He is a big, old school Slick 57
fan. Is he really?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I love going there too. What's a book that it's worth talking about?
I mean, man, that changed my life was The Greatest Salesman in the World.
Oh, Jeff Mercer.
Yeah.
Did he tell you to read that?
Yeah, he did.
Did you read it the way it tells you to?
Yeah, I did. I did. Too. And then I've done it over the years, not that way, but just going through each of the different things that it teaches you. But it goes back to what you were saying. All it is when you do it the right way is you're feeding yourself with good thoughts. And it's funny because that book is not really necessarily for salespeople. It's for anyone in life. And I was watching a deal where Matthew McConaughey was being interviewed and he came on and said, Greatest Salesman in the World is the book that changed my life.
Yeah, I've heard him say that.
So that's incredible. Think of and Grow Rich as another one. I mean, it's just putting very positive goal thoughts in your head and having something kind of tangible to go through. And I did that for 15 years, and every year I'd mark through, you know, I'm on this day, my net worth's going to be this much in liquid assets, and I'm going to do these things to get there. And every year I would mark through that number, and I haven't done it in a while, but I mean, it did change my mindset and financially it changed my life.
Yeah. Those are all incredible books. Do you know Jeff Mercer gave me his copy of The Greatest Salesman in the World? And I think one of the reasons he fired me is because I took it to like a wedding or something. And it got like covered in alcohol and destroyed.
Oh,
and
no.
I had to like buy a new one. And he, you know, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
He was not happy about that. I felt so, I mean, it was like, I was like, dude.
That's funny.
I don't know. This has never happened, by the way, on any other
book I've
ever owned in my life. But I actually destroyed this book somehow. It was terrible. And I mean, it'd been read probably by him 100 times and me. I read it like 20 times or something. But then alcohol destroyed it. So let's see. Do you have a favorite quote?
I mean, my grandpa, again, he was so influential, and the thing that he didn't coin this by any stretch, but he emphasized it to me a lot, which was, you know, character is who you are when no one's watching. And I think that is the way I try to live my life. I mean, it's easy to be a certain way when all eyes are on you, but if you can embody, you know, the greatness that he was, you know, every day when there's nothing to gain by it. And I try to live it that way. But yeah, I mean, my grandpa was so influential. I mean, I went on a dove hunt, commercial real estate dove hunt, and it was done kind of near where my grandparents grew up. And so it's this old high school that they converted into a hunting lodge. And this is just embodies who he was and who I try to be. He had passed away. He and my grandmother had been married for 71 years, and they died within 30 days of each other. So it's just the way it was meant to be, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm going through this line, and there's 50 people behind me, and they're all, you know, the ladies behind are serving food, and they're frantic trying to get everybody fed. And the lady's sitting there, and she's got her head down on the food. And I just happened to say, hey, my family's from around here. And she had her head down, still looking at the food. And she's like, oh, great, great. Who were they? And I said, Emery and Willie Ryder. And she literally stopped everything she was doing, came around the counter and gave me a hug and said, he's the greatest man I've ever met. And so, you know, that was after he died. So I just look at that and say, man, that's the legacy you want. And so when he says those things, and I live by that, when no one's watching, who are you? And, you know, that he didn't have a lot of money or anything like that, but the legacy he left behind is, you know, how I try to model my life. So I try to live by those words.
Love that. It's very clear that you do. Most people don't fool me when they're not that way.
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah, you're a good judge of character, I think.
Yeah, man. you can tell when something's off. So let's see. What about music? What music are you into these days? You want to share a song?
Oh, dude, I love Texas country, and I like everything, really, but I mean, I like Texas country.
Do you watch Jerry Mercer's band?
Yeah, I wrote a couple of songs for them.
Did you?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Fun little thing I've done. He and...
Trinity Junction.
Yeah.
They played at my broker event.
I know.
My first building.
I helped name that band. Jimmy and Jeremy are two of my best friends, and
love those guys,
and
they have great voices.
They really do. They're awesome.
Both of them do. Like they have voices that I think could be like, if they didn't dominate in their professions, basically, like they could go to Nashville.
No, they're
maybe
awesome.
They'll do it one day.
I hope so. But yeah, I love them, and I like the story of like Chris Stapleton, just because he might have the greatest voice ever, and he started his career writing songs for other people to sing, which is unbelievable to me. People wouldn't hear him and say, "Why don't you just record this yourself?" But he did, and that's awesome. But now Jeremy and Jimmy check them out. I think they're about to go on Spotify. So Trinity Junction. Yep.
Sweet. What song though? Like a Chris Stapleton song or what?
No. They've got.
No, I mean like if you want to pick a song for listeners to hear.
Boy, I don't know. I don't know, man. They're all good. I don't have a particular one, but I think.
We'll have to just link Trinity Junction for the sake of our homeboys.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, do it.
There we go. What about a charity or cause that you're passionate about?
Well, I mean, this one's dear to me, but my wife, who's she was actually an intern at Robert Lim when I started. So Anita is my wife, and she, a funny story about that. I was at a broker event at the Broadmoor and
with Hillwood.
Yeah. And I remember at that stage early in my career, I was trying to like make a name for myself. No one knew who I was, and I was really intimidated. And I had this broker come to me. And it was Stuart Smith. Remember Stuart with Equus? He comes up to me and he says, "Hey man, you're a hell of a salesman. You're a hell of a salesman." I'm sitting here like my ego is kind of going up, like, "Oh wow, he knows about me somehow," and I have no idea how. But I'm thinking this is cool. And I go, "Well, thank you so much, man. That's really nice." And he goes, "Well, you gotta be, because your wife is so much better looking than you are." And I was like, yeah, that is true. But anyway, she's awesome. But she went through, she had thyroid cancer, probably about 8 years ago, and it was supposed to be a good cancer, and we had our second child, Ryder, and at that time we thought she was cancer free, and they found out that she wasn't, and it was pretty bad at that time. She had to have every lymph node removed from her ear down to her shoulder, and 17 of them were cancerous, and we had to go to MD Anderson, and we still go there every year. The nature of her cancer is that she'll never be cancer free, so she has to live with kind of this uncertainty. So we drive to MD Anderson every year for her to get tested. And luckily, it's slow growing, and I think she's going to live a normal life. But she took something really negative and made it into a positive, and she started something called Love Your Thyroid Foundation. And she has really raised a tremendous amount of money for that cause. And that, thyroid cancer in women between the ages of 25 and 45 is the fastest growing cancer out there. And it's super underfunded. And I think people don't understand the extent of how that can impact lives. But that's my number one passionate thing to do.
No doubt. Well, we'll put that in the show notes. So everybody go donate and tell Anita that I'm always thinking of her and miss seeing her.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
I really didn't know that was an ongoing thing. I thought it was over. And
We did too. But I mean, the good news is she's in a great place. And honestly, we only talk about it once a year when we have to drive to Houston to get it checked out. But she's persevered and taken, you know, a negative and turned it into something really positive. So I'm super proud of her for that.
We talked about, I had a podcast yesterday. We talked about cancer. I mean, one of my really close friends, his wife just got diagnosed with breast cancer. I think, you know, they're our age and have three kids. And I mean, it's just so scary. Our drummer for Boys Named Sue Scotty died of cancer.
I remember that. Yeah.
Nick Curran, who's one of like my earliest like supporters in my band life, he died of cancer, unfortunately. And my grandma actually died of thyroid cancer, I believe. So that sounds like an amazing cause. And yeah, Nita is just an absolute warrior, and that's amazing that she started that. And I know it's just going to continue to thrive. What's number one on your 2023 vision board / bucket list?
You know, really, it's just trying, to me, it's getting back to the basics. I think, you know, we've all been blessed. The market's been incredible the last few years, and it's still great. But I think it's, for me, I'm just trying to get back to the fundamentals of what it takes to be successful. I've been very blessed, and so that's it. It's very simple.
Yep. Well, thanks so much, Todd, for taking the time to visit with me.
This is awesome.
It was so awesome. We got to hang out. I wish I could have gone to the Rangers game with you and all my crazy-ass cousins.
And I got to say, just about your family, I mean, you got your cousins, Logan, Jacob, Travis, Kristen. All, I mean, it's the most fun group of people. It's amazing that...
And you knew my grandparents.
Oh, they were just like my family. Yeah. And Pam and Charles, and it's just your dad, your mom, you know, I know your sister. So it's a great family, and I'm proud of you, man. You've come a long ways, and I see your success and always rooting for you, man.
Right back at you, brother. Where do our listeners find you?
Man, they probably I need to get into your scene where you can find me on LinkedIn, but I'm not as active as you are, but I'm going to try to model some improvements after you for sure.
Todd Hubbard, ladies and gentlemen, go track him down on LinkedIn or at
NAIRL.com.
Very cool. Thanks, Todd. So great catching up, my brother.
No, man. Awesome to see you.
All right.
Thanks.
Peace.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road. Keep on truckin'. Adios.